Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 416 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Let's dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here really quickly at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, Hollywood, Florida, USA. Friend of the show, former world champion, friend of Eddie's, Ivana Habazin, with a quick win, a six-round unanimous decision for her. Now 22-5, she was able to beat Timia Belik, who's now 7-10. Moving now to the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. Again, former world champion, again friend of the show, Mr. Tevin Farmer, now 32-5 with a draw, a knockout win, a rare knockout win for him in round 6 against Oscar Barajas, who's now 7-9 with a draw. It was actually a highlight reel knockout from Tevin Farmer. He absolutely iced him, which you know, he doesn't do often, barely ever gets a knockout, and he's got one there in spectacular fashion, probably the best knockout of his career. And you know what, if we're being real, probably one of the best knockouts of 2023. Anyway, moving on, we're going to move now to the Tlayomulco de Zuniga in Jalisco, Mexico over here. Friend of the show, Michael Hunter, the heavyweight, returned to winning ways. He's been out of the ring since December 2021. He was back here with a quick TKO in the second round against Miguel Cubos. Michael Hunter now 21-1 with two draws. Miguel Cubos 14-25 with a draw. Moving now actually to this fight here at the Regnum Karia Hotel in Antalya, Turkey. Over here, Murat Gassiev now 30-2, a split decision loss over 12 rounds to Otto Wallin, who gets another good win for him. He's now 26-1. It shouldn't have been a split decision, to be totally honest with you, because Wallin boxed incredibly well, incredibly disciplined. I say incredibly well, I don't mean that from an entertainment point of view, but I mean from a boxing brain point of view. Thought he was really good, you know, fought the whole fight pretty much on the back foot, but, you know, big, tall, 6'5", southpaw, really good jab he showed, really good feet because he was able to get out of danger, really good defense while having his back to the ropes as well. Murat Gassiev really struggling to kind of pierce that guard and get through with anything meaningful, and anytime he did land something meaningful, Wallin showed a really good chin, and Wallin would come back with a little combination of his own. Honestly, Wallin really bossed the fight, but like I say, for 99% of the fight, he was on the back foot. A lot of people on social media scoring the fight, saying that Gassiev won that round. It was a bit worrying because, again, I think those people were just looking at the man coming forward and automatically giving him a round based on him trying to press the fight. And obviously, he wasn't landing the cleaner of the work. Wallin, actually, like I say, was really good in this fight. In some other fights, he's been accused of having a bit of a engine problem, but he seemed to have a good engine through the whole 12 rounds, even though he was on the back foot the whole time. He committed when he needed to commit. He, like I say, had a great guard, great jab, and he just fought a really smart fight. He turned it into his type of fight, and yeah, he made Gassiev look awful, actually. Gassiev Like I say, he's been extremely inactive since moving up to heavyweight, and this was his chance, really, to get a good name on his record. A lot of people felt he was going to go in there and knock Wallin out. Obviously, Tyson Fury couldn't do that, and yeah, Gassiev couldn't do it either. Didn't even come close to happening, and he actually got wobbled himself early on in the fight. I can't remember which round, but brilliant stuff for Wallin. I'm really happy for him. For some reason, I just wanted him to win, and he's won. It's another great win for him. I think he's one of the best fighters in the world at heavyweight, and just for some reason is never in that top four, top five, top six conversation. No one has Otto Wallin in their top five or six, but why not? You know, why not? There's a few guys I would definitely you know, see on other guys' top five or six list that I think Otto Wallin could beat. I think he's one of the best guys. I really rate Wallin a lot. Moving now to the York Hall, Bethnal Green. Yeah, this one was on Sky. I'm going to go from my memory here because I can't remember too much of it. My memory's awful, man. I try to, you know, to keep, you know, keep everything fresh in my mind over the weekend, and then it just goes away by the time we record the show. It's maybe we should bring it forward a few days and record sooner. But let me try my best here. Francesca Hennessy, the daughter of Mick Hennessy, made her pro debut. Looked really good, actually. She fought quite a, you know, durable girl, I'd say. Sonia Kloss, who's now 1-9. Francesca Hennessy with the TKO in round 5. She was thrown straight in a 6-rounder on her debut. Obviously, 6 2-minute rounds. Really impressed me, though. I think Hennessy's a good fighter, like I say. She said in the build-up she's a bit of a slickster. I thought, okay, if she's saying that, she's probably one of those that, you know, hits and doesn't get hit, but isn't that aggressive minded, if you like. You know, we've seen her brother as well, Mick Hennessy Jr. He's not really a puncher or anything like that. Decent fighter, but like I say, lacks power. And I just thought, yeah, she's fighting a tough girl here, probably going to go the distance, but she did really well to get a KO on her debut. Moving up the card once again, Stephen McKenna, now 14-0, a retirement win against Darren Tetley. He retired on his stall at the end of round 6, didn't come out for round 7. I think it was the corner that stopped it. Tetley now 22-5. Really good fight. Definitely fight of the card for me. It was, you know, there was a bit of needle there between both guys at the weigh-in and stuff like that. And you're never too sure if it's going to translate into a good fight when there's a bit of beef beforehand. Some of it is, you know, fabricated. I don't think it was fabricated in this case. And I was really looking forward to this one. And it was on really early as well in the card, which didn't make much sense. But it was a great, great fight. And like I say, for me, it was fight of the card. McKenna is just, you know, I'd love to see him in there with Florian Marku. I think that's a great fight to make next, by the way, but no one seems to be talking about that, even though it'd be an easy one to make. But yeah, McKenna is a bit of a nightmare, really. Bit of a wrecking ball, doesn't mind taking two to land one. You know, he's a guy who fights like, you know, like there's no tomorrow. He's just fighting as if he doesn't give a damn about longevity, but it makes it fun for fight fans. And yeah, you know, so far his power looks, you know, looks legit. He's beaten another really good fighter here, probably on paper at least the best win of his career. And he come through it in good fashion. I think there's a lot more to come from Stephen McKenna. What else do we have? Yeah, Jimmy TKV. He's now 5-1. He was TKO'd in round 6 by the big punching Brazilian Igor Macedo, who's now 12-1. All 12 still by KO. He's never heard the final bell, Macedo. And like I say, was getting in with Jimmy TKV. And if you listen to the podcast and you're just a listener, you know, you're very much appreciated. But some people join my boxing betting group, which is on Telegram, and those people will know that I tipped Macedo to win by KO at 14-1. Some people got it at 16-1, and he actually pulled it off. So yeah, a lot of people were quite happy with me. A few nice messages saying, you know, thanks for this, thanks for that. A few guys sending me screenshots, winning big money on that, man. 14 times your stake. But yeah, I just thought it was worth a little punt on Macedo because I'm not, you know, not sold on Jamie TKV. And I could see just from like the weigh-in and like the workout and that, every time Macedo got in the face of Jamie TKV in these face-offs, you could just see he's here to win. Like, there's no way he's coming for a check. He wants to win this fight. And he had such a fierce look in his face. And, you know, no doubt the guy's a big puncher. And, yeah, went in there and completely dominated TKV, completely dominated him. I don't think you could give him a round. Every time he landed a decent shot, which was quite periodically, the crowd would go wild, but it was few and far between. And, yeah, I mean, he took some big shots early on. He put himself in a position where he needed a knockout, and then, you know, it never looked like coming. And then he ended up getting TKO'd. Brilliant win for the Brazilian. Like I said, I actually tweeted it out as well. The matchmaker for that fight there, oh God, what a terrible job that they've done. I don't know who the matchmaker was, but, oh, I think it was Al Siesta. Wow, he seems to normally get it right, by the way. But having said that, I mean, he's a friend of the show, Al Siesta. He does normally get it right. He does match guys tough, though. I don't think he's a big fan of easy fights. He likes to put guys in with similar records. In the past, I've seen that. He's put in two undefeated guys, both 13-0, things like that. He does match you quite tough. So I think he's made a big mistake. I think he'll hold his hands up and admit it. But, you know, it's not really Al Siesta's way to go about things, just giving you like an easy fight, even though the guy's only five fights in. I think he's clearly picked the wrong guy here. Maybe should have been a stiffer test in a different direction, but you win some, you lose some, I guess. Also on the card, Vidal Riley. Again, I expected, well, didn't expect, but again, in my boxing betting group, I tipped Vidal Riley to win this one on points. It was four times your stake, so four to one, and he did win on points. He's now double figures, 10-0. He was able to take the O away from the previously undefeated Nathan Qualis, who's now 12-1. One-sided, really, for Vidal Riley. Started the fight quite well, and then I think seemed to kind of just slow down a little bit as it went on and cruise to a points win. It was for the vacant English cruiserweight title. Callum Simpson on the card as well. I thought it was going to be a bit more exciting than it was. Yeah, gone the distance now twice in a row. He was at one point, I think, 11-0 or something like that with 9 KOs. And yeah, went the distance with Boris Crichton, went the distance here with Jose Macias. Yeah, Callum Simpson, like I say, 13-0 now. Macias down once in the eighth round. Good shot that put him down as well, if I remember correctly, but managed to get up and tough it out. And he had a few moments himself here and there, Macias. But yeah, it was a good showing from Simpson. I think a lot of people expected the KO, but it was a good showing from him. We saw, you know, the fact that he can definitely go 10 and look pretty good late on as well. And the main event, Caroline Dubois, now 8-0, a unanimous decision against the very tough Magali Rodriguez, who was down once in the sixth and twice in the ninth, but still managed to, you know, to hear the final bell. Rodriguez now 22-7 with four draws. Caroline Dubois, really good performance, mature performance. It was for the vacant IBO World Lightweight title, which of course no one really in their right minds regards as a proper world title, but it's a step in the right direction at least. Caroline Dubois, yeah, had to answer a few questions. I think she got caught with some good shots, and Magali Rodriguez, you know, showed that massive heart. Kept on trying and trying, wasn't good enough in the end, but, you know, yeah, Dubois didn't really put in a career best performance, I don't think. I think she'll know that, you know, there's a few things to work on, but she's still early on in her pro career, so it's not like I can sit here criticising her. I think she put in a good performance. It was a big step up, and she's come for it. She come for it quite easily, but there was a few hairy moments where she had to answer some questions, and she did, so yeah, brilliant stuff for her. Moving now to the Wembley Arena. Again, London, United Kingdom. Going to run through the undercard real quickly here. A few ladies to mention. Maisie Rose Courtney now 5-0. A points win over 6-2s against Martina Bernil. Now 5-3 with a draw. Shannon Ryan now 6-0. Friend of the show. A points win over 8-2s against Xenia Zhornek, who's now 11-7. She looked like she might stop her at one point, actually, Shannon Ryan. She's still, you know, she was going through the gears, looked really good actually, and she came out dancing to the ring like some kind of Alicia Baumgartner impressionist. But no, listen, she's Shannon Ryan, and you know, it was a good performance from her, really good performance, dominated a tough lady. Ellie Scottney as well, it was kind of weird to see her on the card, you know, defended her world title at 7 p.m. but again, we know it's because Shane McGuigan had to leave Wembley and dash over to York Hall to be in the corner with Caroline Dubois. That was cool in itself. Yeah, Ellie Scottney, 10-round unanimous decision, extremely dominant against Laura Griffer. Again, Ellie Scottney pretty much won as expected, the same way that you'd have thought that she'd win. On points, still yet to get a KO, got in there with a really tough girl. I did say I wouldn't be surprised if Scottney got the stoppage late on, didn't ever really look like coming, but yeah, she dominated it, probably won every round. Also on the card as well, really, really good win for Rhiannon Dixon. I did say I wouldn't be surprised if there was an upset. Katarina Fanders in the other corner, bit of a pressure fighter, she can sometimes outwork ladies. We'd seen her only lose to Terry Harper, and Terry Harper's on a much higher level than Rhiannon Dixon had shown so far. But you know what, credit to Rhiannon Dixon, she's a new EBU European lightweight title, lightweight champion I should say. She's now 9-0, and she, I don't think, lost a round. She shut out Katarina Fanders, and I was really impressed with Rhiannon Dixon. I tell you what, I think she's got a very bright future in the sport, obviously being trained by Anthony Crawler. Also on the card as well, Siobhan Clark, he's now 7-0, a unanimous decision against the teak tough Vasyl Dukar. Vasyl Dukar, as we know, we've seen him before, he's always in there in the late rounds, still giving you trouble right up to the final bell. 14-7 with two draws now. It was for the vacant IBF International Cruiserweight title. Yeah, Chev Clark, quite a mature performance from him as well, really. I think he's got a lot of skills. He went through the gears a little bit here and there. And yeah, you know, he was too good for Dukar, really. I think a polished boxer with a lot of, you know, a lot of tricks in their arsenal will beat Vasyl Dukar in the way that Clark did. But again, Clark, to get in there with Dukar this early on in his career, Dukar is a bit of a kind of handful. He can be a handful. He's sprung a couple of upsets. He's come close to springing a few more upsets. Didn't happen here. Siobhan Clark dominated him and looked really good. And yeah, the main event, Jai Oppertai. He's now 23-0, a TKO in round 4 against the UK's Jordan Thompson, who's now 15-1. He loses his O. Thompson down once in the 3rd round, once in the 4th round. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. The first round, I mean, Oppertai showed no respect to Jordan Thompson. He was on the front foot with that pressure that he brings. He was all over Thompson. He landed a fantastic shot near the end of the first round, but kind of got a little bit too excited, I think, and walked into a uppercut from Thompson off the ropes. It was a good shot from Thompson, but Oppertai, I mean, he just saw red after that and came straight back with a great shot himself. And I felt that Thompson was in heaps of trouble on the ropes and was, in a way, saved. Not saved by the bell, but the bell came at a good time. Like, it was ending bad for him in the first round. Big round for Oppertai. And then, yeah, round 2, I gave Oppertai that round as well. You know, he dominated it, and he continued to put dents in Thompson in that round there. But yeah, round 3, unbelievable. Down goes Thompson. That was the first knockdown. He got back up. Oppertai had 2 minutes left in that round as well to get him out of there. He was down early there, Jordan Thompson. But Oppertai didn't finish him, but he absolutely battered him. I did think the referee could have stopped it. It was that bad. The corner could have stopped it. I would have liked to see the towel maybe thrown in. Jordan went back to his corner. Tony Sims says, I'm going to give you one more round. And I wrote right here, my gut told me we wouldn't see a whole round completed. And then, yeah, comes out in the 4th round. And it didn't take long for Oppertai to hurt Thompson again. He hadn't recovered from the knockdown in the 3rd round, I don't think, properly. And the beating that came after that. And yeah, you know, put him on Bambi legs once again, and then the referee did stop it as Thompson was on his way down to the floor. It was a brutal performance from Jai Oppertai, one of the most one-sided world title fights in a long time that I can remember anyway. It was so one-sided, and yeah, he absolutely destroyed Jordan Thompson. It was demoralizing, I think, for Thompson as well, who, like I say, behind the scenes, I'd heard that Thompson had stopped a few guys in the gym. I'd heard he'd been looking really, really, really good. good. He was full of confidence, and he was the much bigger man. If you've seen the two at the weigh-in, they don't look like they're in the same weight category. And yeah, went in there and, you know, got absolutely just battered. That's the only way I can put it, man. I've seen a few social media posts from Jordan Thompson since then. Seems like he's in decent spirits. Like, you know, he's not down in the dumps, depressed. He seems to be saying some positive things, which is a good sign. But it was a real one-sided battering. And as for Opetai, you know, I mean, a lot of people were saying his only real win was against Maris Bradis. I agree, that was the one that definitely put him on the scene. He became a world champion that night. But looking at him, you know, he reminded me in some ways of a Dimitri Bivol, just the way he'd bounce in and out. He had that in and out style. And just the balance, his balance is so, so good, man. You know, he's got foot speed, he's got hand speed, you know, the power, the angles, even through a few chopping right hands. He looked like a cheat code against Jordan Thompson. But yeah, definitely remind me of Bivol. He really looked like a maybe more power punching Bivol. And that is a massive compliment to pay there to Jai Opetai. So he can take that from me. It was a fantastic performance. And yeah, I really seem to, you know, quite like him as well as a character. Seems like quite a cool cat. And, you know, long may it continue. He's a breath of fresh air, I think. And he's what Australian boxing needs right now as well. You know, I think he's a fantastic fighter with, you know, a real bright future at the weight. There's a lot of good fights that can be made. Yeah, all the best to Jai Opetai. Moving now to this one. It went down at the... Oh, I've forgotten the venue. Where was it? It was in America, wasn't it? At the... dear, oh dear. It was live on Showtime, wasn't it? T-Mobile Arena, Las Vegas, Nevada, yeah. So, yeah, going over there, where shall we start? Let's start, I guess, with the undercard. Win for Terrell Gaulchet, friend of the show, the Olympian, now 24-3 with a draw, a majority decision over eight rounds against Keandre Leatherwood, now 23-9 with a draw. Alexander Govozdik, former world champion, another friend of the show, now 20-1, a KO in the second round against Isaac Rodriguez, who's now 28-5. Frank Sanchez, the heavyweight, the Cuban, who's definitely about 75 years of age, is now 23-0. His opponent, Scott Alexander, they say it's a corner retirement, but I can't remember if the referee stopped it in the corner. I think the referee might have stopped it, to be honest with you. But he didn't come out for round five. It's gone down as a corner retirement. Alexander down in the second round, but clipped Frank Sanchez big time, I think, in the first round. Frank Sanchez, you know, his legs were gone for a moment. They got clipped, really unexpected there. It was for the WBC Continental America's heavyweight title. Also on that card, when we move up the card, I'm sure you're going to have a lot to say about this, Eddie, and I will come to you soon. We're going to talk about this one here. Your Dennis Ugas moved to 27-6. He lost a unanimous decision over 12 rounds for the WBC interim welterweight world title to friend of the show Mario Barrios, now 28-2. Ugas down in round 2 and round 12, deducted a point in round 12 for spitting out the mouthpiece. It was a really, really good fight, actually. Really good fight. I say really good fight, maybe that's a stretch. I'm a big Mario Barrios fan. Like I say, he's a friend of the show, but it was more a really good performance from him. He looked really sharp in the first round. Ugas, for me, looked a little bit rusty initially. I didn't think he was getting his measure of the distance or his timing quite right in the first, but it was expected, I guess, in some ways, because he'd been inactive. Round two, Ugas was, I felt, on the way to winning that round, actually, till he walked into Barrios's jab, and it was a perfectly timed jab. Ugas wasn't hurt, but yeah, he was knocked to the floor, and he stole the round there, Barrios, with that knockdown. Round three was a big round, though, for Ugas, particularly due to landing a big body shot that seemed to bother Barrios quite badly early on. Round four, again, I gave it to Ugas. Barrios was effective with his sharp jab, but Ugas was timing that jab sometimes and coming over the top of it with some big backhands. Barrios also started to fall short a little bit with some of his shots. I didn't like to see him wasting that energy in that area. So yeah, Ugas round in the third and fourth. Where are we now? We're now in the fifth. Ugas, for me, I gave that round as well. I think his combinations and his hand speed was troubling Barrios. a little bit there. And Barrios is more of like a single punch boxer rather than a combinations guy. I think he can be outworked, and I think Ugas was, you know, having at that point his foot on the pedal a little bit, was starting to outwork Barrios. Round six was a really, really close round. I gave it to Barrios, but honestly, I'm not too sure. Ugas hit Barrios after the bell as well. I'm pretty sure it was just an accident, but yeah, Barrios blocked the punch, but it was a big shot from Ugas there. Round seven, at that point, they showed Steve Farhood's scorecard for the previous six rounds. It was exactly round for round the same as my scorecard. Round seven was a hard round to score again. I decided to edge it to Ugas, though. Round eight and nine, I gave to Barrios. And then round 10, Barrios again. At this point, the eye of Ugas had been closing more and more as the fight had gone on. Ugas was turning into a one-eyed fighter. He was taking more and more punishment. Barrios had seemed to turn the screw. And yeah, the referee, Thomas Taylor, had the doctor take a look at the eye in round 10 and also in round 11. And in that 11th round, that was a big round for Barrios. Ugas was getting beaten up badly at that point. And then, yeah, unbelievably, he managed to get into the 12th round with that dodgy eye. And in the 12th round, down goes Ugas again. A 10-8 round, it was heading to. But then, yeah, spits out his mouthpiece after that, loses another point. 10-7 round for Barrios, and he beat the hell out of Ugas in that round. And for me, that was Barrios's, you know, 147-pound coming out party. It was a great performance. Yeah, you know, Ugas may have been coming off a layoff, but he was still the favourite to win the fight and the much more accomplished fighter, I think it's fair to say. So really happy with Barrios. I'm not sure how much longer Ugas is going to want to carry on. It's a shame because I think he had a bad start. He had a great spell in the middle of the fight, but then it all come to nothing when his eye closed and Barrios really took over. So yeah, really happy for Barrios, and Ugas is in a difficult spot. Yeah, that's about it for that one. Moving up the card once again, Jesus Ramos loses his O. He was a big favourite. He's now 20-1. He loses on points to Erickson Lubin. I thought it was worth a bet, but I didn't manage to bet on it in the end. Lubin now 26-2. It's a great, great win for him. I was saying on last week's show, Lubin was coming off a great win last time out. He beat, he knocked out Luis Arias, and no one had done that before. Luis Arias, a couple fights before, I think, had beaten Jarrett Hurd. So, you know, Lubin was in some decent form going into this fight, actually. And I was always wondering, will his smart boxing conquer the pressure of Ramos? I don't know. It was going to be a decent fight stylistically. In the end, I don't think it was a great fight stylistically. A lot of people still felt that Ramos deserved to win. A lot of people were quite annoyed when they saw it was a unanimous decision. But yeah, Ramos at some point seemed to cruise the last few rounds and lost them clearly. And I guess he just thought he had the win in the bag. I don't really know. It was a weird performance from Ramos. He didn't seem too angry that he'd lost his O either. It was really, really weird. But, you know, take nothing away from Lubin. He's had some ups and downs in his career, and he's probably now in the best form, you know, since being a pro, because he's got two back-to-back really good wins, particularly this one. I'm sure you've seen it, Eddie, but I'll move to the main event quickly and then you can just give your summary on the card. Saul Canelo Alvarez, he's now got that 60th career win, which is crazy. 60-2 with two draws. A unanimous decision over 12 rounds against Jermell Charlo, now 35-2 with a draw. He retains all of his world titles. I tell you what, I had a bet on this fight, actually, and I swear to God, it was 180-1. And the one thing that I needed to happen was that Canelo would get the KO in rounds 7-12. When he dropped Charlo in the 7th round, it was begging me to cash out the bet. Take the money now. Take the money now. And I thought, no. If he's dropped him in the 7th, he's surely not going to still be there in round 12. And yeah, I'm gutted, man. I was kicking myself that I didn't take the cash out money. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, Jermell Charlo somehow survives. Let me run through the fight. It wasn't the best fight. I think it's going to be one of those Canelo fights to forget. Which I can't say for many of his fights. But yeah, the first round, a really crazy statistic. 23 punches were thrown in the first round combined. One punch landed for each man. That is crazy. I was thinking I might have actually been able to survive one round with Canelo if he fought like this and I just took one punch, or maybe that might have KO'd me, I don't know. But anyways, you know, Canelo probably edged that round. Charlo was constantly moving. Straight away I thought to myself, I don't want him to show Canelo too much respect. That was the first thing I wrote down. Round two, I think that would be the story of the fight, by the way, but round two, Canelo round for sure. Charlo completely on the back foot, did nothing in the second round, showing way too much respect. Round three and four, Canelo was in full control, won both those rounds. Round five, Canelo round, Charlo was starting to find a little bit of a groove, starting to have a little bit of success finally. Round six, a Canelo round again, Charlo was opening up a little bit more, but still being punished almost every time he would open up. Round seven, it was a straight, I don't really know what it was. It was like a straight right hand slash right hook. I don't know if you want to fix that, Eddie, because it was a weird shot from Canelo. But yeah, it was straight through the guard of Charlo. Down goes Charlo. He dips down, pops back up, and then takes a knee. It was smart of him to do so if he was hurt. Obviously a 10-8 round for Canelo. Charlo did actually finish the round quite well. And then yeah, from that point onwards, man, it didn't look like the stoppage was going to come, really. It just got, I couldn't believe it. You know, he was down in the seventh. I thought Canelo would have been able to stop him, but no. Canelo wins the eighth, wins the ninth. At that point, Charlo's more in survival mode. I think he just wants to hear the final bell. I think if it was up to him, he would have loved to hear the final bell come in round eight or nine. He just had enough, really. And then, yeah, Canelo dominates round 10 and 11. Round 12, Canelo round again, obviously. Charlo, just for me, in summary, just didn't take enough risks in the fight. He just didn't want to get stopped. I think he probably knew that he'd lose wide, and it was quite a poor performance from him, in all honesty. And I think a lot of people feel the same, because he's took a lot of heat, actually, on social media, particularly on Twitter, you know, for that performance. A lot of people saying he just turned up for a check. Anyway, there was a lot there that I've gone over, Eddie. I'm guessing you saw this card. If there's anything you want to discuss on it, go through it. Then, yeah, come in and say your piece. And if you saw anything from the UK, then say something about that. I don't know if you did.
No, I didn't see anything from the UK, but I came right in. Once again, you know, the same thing happened with my cable situation where it was delayed. Thank goodness I realized and say, you know, and took a look at the screen, because I was watching like the buildup. And I'm like, wait a minute, man. It's like almost 10 o'clock. Why in the hell is the buildup still going on? So, but anyway, I got there around the time of when Ugas and Barrios was in, I think, like the ninth round, ninth or tenth round. And his eye was just looking crazy. And it's something with that eye, man. I think he's really got to rethink a few things about this career going forward, regardless of how well he did in the fight early, because I was listening to your synopsis of what was going on in the fight. What your thought was at a fight, and obviously he was doing well at times, but toward the end of the fight, obviously the eye became a real problem. Like, you know, and of course the doctor's, you know, trying to let it go. He doesn't want to get in, you know, he doesn't want to be the reason the fight is over. So, but to just keep having this issue now after that Spence situation is just not going to be good. If he's going to fight another, you know, say fights again and the same thing happens, even if he's in control of a fight, it's just he's got to really look to it, because, you know, look to that eye and really see what is going on, because you know with those cracked eye sockets could be dangerous for your vision, you know what I mean, going forward in the eye itself. So he's just got to be really careful going forward. Although, saying all that be said, from what I was seeing from Barrios, some of the things he done in those last few rounds, he did look pretty sharp. He looked like he was in control. I don't know, like I said, from the early part, you know, I'm only getting it from you, Joe, so I'm going to take your word for it. So, I mean, all in all, from what I saw, pretty decent fight. With Lubin and what's the kid's name?
Ramos.
I want to say that. Ramos, yes. I really like Lubin, and I like what he brings to the table, his boxing skill, his the way he fights. He's such a professional with how he moves and the things he does, no wasted effort. But, you know, this fight, I knew it was going to be tough for him, because this kid brings pressure. He's strong. He's tough. You know, Lubin, sometimes when he gets caught with some shots, it could buzz him, maybe get, you know, he's lost, I think, by knockout for his only two losses. Two losses. So, you know, I was worried about that, but it looked like he was dealing with that well. Even But at times, it, like, the pressure was getting to him, and he just wasn't being active enough. So, you know, I watch, and each round I'm watching, and I'm saying, he's doing things that are good. He's doing well at times, and he's tying up sometimes at the right time and then getting the start, you know, going back to the center and boxing. But then there was the times he wasn't active enough, and he wasn't doing enough in the early part of the fight. And it got me looking, and I was looking at the cards and what they had, and I was like, man, you know what? It does seem like he might be losing some of these rounds or losing most of these rounds. Then it got toward the end, and you know, once Ramos literally, like, he took off. I think it was the 9th round or the 10th round, one of those. He just literally, like, he didn't do much of anything, and Lubin started to pick it up. I think it had a little bit to do with what Lubin was doing as well. Then 10, 11, 12, just straight through. Like, he won all three of those rounds as well, and he just gave up the last four or five rounds. And I was like, damn, he actually gave him an opportunity to really say. Now, I'm not saying that it wasn't something that Lubin was doing, because he is a pretty damn good fighter. But I just think that Ramos wasn't pressing it enough like he was doing early on. Maybe he got a little tired. Maybe there was a shot that Lubin landed, because he landed a couple of decent shots at different times in the fight, where he got his respect. And he just was like, I'm not going to go in there right now. You know, I'm going to just be happy to try to land some jabs and try to box with him a little bit. You never know what these guys are feeling when they're in there. So it's part of the reason why I don't like to bet. But yeah, and then, you know, I'm fully expecting, especially looking at the scorecard that they had, you know, as they were going to the end. And then I'm thinking, yeah, this is probably similar to what the judge is going to have or something like that. Completely the opposite of what I thought. I was thinking, okay, 115, 113 for Ramos. That's cool. You know, I could be, but it was 115, 113. I think 116, I think it might have been that on two cards, and then 116, 112, or 111, or something, or 117, 111, something like that on the other card. And I was fully expecting to hear Ramos the winner, and then they said Lubin. I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. I would have expected, you know what I mean? Like, I was pressing the action, even though I thought Lubin landed good shots and did it. You know, he's boxing pretty well. I didn't expect him to get that decision. So in that fight, I was actually kind of shocked that they respected and rewarded the boxer. I really don't know if that was right. You know, I got a couple texts from some people that were saying that was bullshit. So I don't know. I don't know. It, to me, I thought that the other kid was going to get it. But I really like his attitude in the loss. He really had a great attitude. And looked like his boxing, you know what I mean? You know, he was sharp. He gave him credit. He said he did some good things. You know, I'm going to learn from this. And he's like, you know, for a young kid like that, he got a good head on his shoulders when it comes to understanding what he possibly did wrong and the fact that he didn't, you know, turn up at the end of the fight like he should have. So, you know, all in all, good performance on both ends. My decision on the decision was I thought that the kid Ramos, you know, probably, you know, got it, but hey, it happens. You know, and it wasn't that bad, but it was, you know, it was unexpected in my opinion. As far as the main event, it's what I picked. I figured it would go to distance. I know Charlo was proud. I knew he was going to get in there, and I figured he would at least try for a while until maybe he started to feel something that, you know, shocked him, or maybe, you know, he would start to try to stay away if he felt that those punches were bothering him so much. And you can even see him, you know, even in the first few rounds, almost like wincing, almost like, you know, like you're bracing for something major to come. And it's almost like you're about to get in a car accident and you're kind of like bracing up. And I was like, that's not a good sign. You know, just looking at how he was reacting to Canelo's punches, and he was always in retreat. And most of the time, you know, with him, and he's always looking to land that big shot. Like when he's fighting Tony Harris, and he's looking for those big shots. He's willing to, you know, be in front of him and kind of take one sometimes, not necessarily take one to give one, but look for, you know, counter shots and, you know, in a little slick way, you know, when the opportunity presents. But Canelo just dominated. It's like he scared him in the first few rounds with the power that he was bringing. He just knew that he couldn't, you know, I can see, you know, I'm a fighter, so I understand how guys feel. I mean, the look of guys when it's like, man, I need to figure out how to get the hell to the last few rounds or the last round so I can hear that bell. You know what I mean? And you could just see, it's like he was looking at the clock. every once in a while looking at the clock, seeing when the round was going to be over, seeing when the fight was going to be over. It was just, he wasn't in it to win after a while. He realized after the first few rounds that he just couldn't beat the guy. He just wasn't capable. You know what I mean? He's his height and all that, his size, he was supposed to be able to be at that weight with no problem as compared to Canelo being 5'8" up at that weight, but he just wasn't prepared for what he was facing. You know what I mean? He just was not capable of dealing with Canelo. Now, that's not saying that, you know, he's not a good fighter, you know what I mean? But he's just not at that level with Canelo. That's just be honest. You know, the fight went not necessarily as I expected. I didn't think he would get stopped. I thought he would try more than what he did. So in that case, I'm kind of disappointed in him. But, hey, man, I know what it's like to get in there and get punches from these guys. And like for me, some of those guys seem like they're twice my size. So, I mean, I do feel what he felt, but you got to do more. You got to put yourself out there at least to try to get something out of it. You know what I'm saying? Other than the check, because that's why people killing him now, because it just looks bad as a professional athlete.
Well, there we go. That's what Eddie has to say about that card there that went down in Vegas. And that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the super middleweight contender. It is, of course, Mr. Alontes Sly as a Fox. Alontes, welcome back on the show, my man.
Right, man. It's great to be back, man, to be honest with you. It's great to be back in the ring, great to be back on the show, great to get everything going again, man.
There we go, there we go. So, Tez, we last spoke back in December 2020. That's the last time that you've been on the podcast. I can't believe it's been that long. At that time, you'd just beaten Marcos Hernandez. Since then, obviously, you've had 3 fights, a win followed by 2 losses. Firstly, just in a nutshell, a real, real nutshell, David Morel Tez seems like a special fighter, by the way.
I feel like he is. I feel like he's a pretty great champion. You know, he's very talented, man. He's very talented. You know, he has a good command in the ring there and a good power as well. So he's definitely a force to be reckoned with.
And obviously your last fight, I mean, I remember staying up late to watch it live. You flew to Canada to box Eric Bazinyan. You started the fight very well. You were getting the better of Bazinyan. A lot of people felt that way. As the fight went on, something seemed to change. Maybe you got a little tired. I'm not sure. Bazinyan got back in the fight, snatched a points victory. 2 of the cards, extremely wide, unfair cards in my opinion. But talk me through that fight. What seemed to go wrong, Tez?
So, you know, I went in there. I went in there, I feel like, with a great strategy. You know, being economical with my punches and everything. Just, you know, boxing. You know, boxing and frustrating. But around 4, I hit a wall, man. I couldn't figure out what it was, but I mean, I figured out what it was. It was prior to that, you know, I was in the sauna a little too much, and so my legs were pretty much gone. Like, as much as I was using my legs, as good as I was using my legs, they were gone. They weren't a part of the equation anymore. So it made a big difference. And then I felt like I couldn't do it. Yeah, I felt like I just couldn't really get off like I needed to. You know, I still hurt him. I hurt him in the 10th round, but I didn't even have the energy to finish him.
Yeah, it was a real shame, man. It was a good opportunity. A lot of people saying that even though Bazinyan, you know, quote-unquote, won the fight, they weren't very impressed. They kind of slowed down their hopes with the guy. We'll see. But yeah, you're back this weekend in Vegas on that Ramirez-Smith undercard. You'll be boxing Bektimir Melikuziev, Bek the Bully, they call him. What have you made of his career so far?
You know, so after he got knocked out by Gabriel Rosado, I guess they might have thought to rush him a little bit. He got knocked out by Gabriel Rosado. They kind of started slow walking him again. You know, they fed him some opponents, fed him some people that he was supposed to beat, and that he did. He put away, you know what I'm saying? The last guy, I think his name was Edimov from Russia. That guy, I mean, you know, I don't feel like he was, you know, that great, but, you know, Beck couldn't stop him, you know. Beck, he was a little bit taller than his other opponents, and I think that made it all the difference, too. So, I mean, that guy, who was maybe about 6 feet, maybe gave him problems. I know I can give him more problems at 6'5".
It's interesting the point you make there. You know, he maybe had difficulties with the height of the guy you mentioned, Ekimov, Sergei Ekimov. You're a lot taller than him. That's an angle that you see. Maybe you can exploit something there. But concentrating on Melikuziev, he can be extremely aggressive early on. Just going back through your record for a similar style, can you draw any comparison maybe to Melikuziev and Liam Williams, just in the fact that they're both very aggressive early on? Maybe Melikuziev is bigger and stronger than Williams, though.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. That's actually a really good comparison between those two right there, being aggressive and everything. But I mean, that's the thing. After that got knocked out, all of his fights haven't been as aggressive as, you know, his beginning. You know, he wasn't as aggressive with after Gabriel was out and knocked him out. You know, I think that plays against him regardless, though. You know, being overly aggressive is how he got caught with a shot, and that made him, you know, that made him slow down a bit. But, you know, in order for him to beat me, he won't be able to outbox me at a distance. So, it's, you know, he's going to have to be aggressive in there, which I plan to, you know, make him pay for that, you know, make him run to some shots just doing, you know, his most to try to get in there and close the distance.
I'm really happy that you just said that you feel like he's been less aggressive since being knocked out, because I was going to say the exact same thing. That tells me you've probably studied this guy pretty good.
For sure.
You speak there, Tez, about he's not going to be able to outbox you at range. I agree, it's almost impossible. He's going to need to be aggressive. How do you win this fight? Obviously, we've seen Melikuziev, as you mentioned, walk onto a shot from Rosado. He got iced that night. He went on to avenge it, as we mentioned. Other than that, he hasn't really put a foot wrong. How do you become victorious? Is it keeping it long?
So definitely keeping it long. I mean, the fight with Eric Bazanyan, that was those first few rounds was the blueprint of how my style should really look, how it really should be. You know, I can slow it down a bit or speed up, but I keep that pace. I like to be able to keep that pace right there, and try to make sure that, you know, somebody tries to match that pace. And then, you know, for this particular instance, if that comes in too aggressively, I'll make him run into more shots. You know what I mean? You know, that's it. I feel like it's my season, so I'm not here to lose. I'm not here as an opponent. I'm not here as a rollover, man. It's comeback season.
And again, you speak about having the fight at range. How important here for you in your mind is the jab? Because obviously we know you're a big, tall guy. You've got a really good jab. But sometimes when I watch you, I'm screaming, thinking, why are you not using the jab? Why do you want to mix it up on the inside so much? I really don't want you to get drawn in here into a, you know, phone booth fight. But how important is that jab, and how important is it to not get drawn into his fight, Tez?
Well, I'm gonna make my jab the number one priority in my strategy this fight, and just make sure he's eating a jab. I don't think Beck has the best defense at all. So, I mean, he's gonna be walking into a lot of my jabs. You know, we worked on that throughout camp. You know, jabbing and sending my right hand off my jab, but, you know, being a very, I guess, balanced, you know, I did one of my last sponsors, we did percentages on, you know, how many jabs I threw versus my right hand. And I got to 3-2, which is 3 jabs to 2 right hands for every 5 punches, which is 60% to 40%, which is 2-3 or 3-2. I'm fine with that. I think that's a very good and balanced attack. And so that means 60% of my jabs, you know, 60% of my jabs will be popping out there, and I'll be running them into right hands.
And Tez, we speak a lot. Even if we don't do an interview, we speak a lot via text, on the phone, etc. And I'm not just saying this, but I hear something in your voice where you sound a hell of a lot, I don't want to say more confident than in previous fights, but something in your voice, I'm convinced, like, this is real confidence. You got a hell of a belief in beating this guy.
I do. I definitely, I'm not sure, man. Like I said, I feel like it's my season. You know, it's my time to shine. And this is an opportunity to showcase that. You know, I'm just, I don't know, like, you know, I think, you know, I've gotten a little more spiritual and everything too. And so I think that helps a lot. You know, being, you know, I feel like God's with me, you know, so I'm doing my thing.
And on the flip side, you mentioned here, you know, this is another opportunity. In your mind, Tez, is this a last chance saloon for you at the highest level, so to speak?
It may be. It may be. You know, it's hard as it was to get fights, being as though I'm this tall, you know, and I'm able to actually fight. So, you know, this fight to me show, I mean, it's going to be a kind of win or don't. I mean, win or go home type of thing. You know what I'm saying? I'm here to win and, you know, reinvigorate my career.
And every time we speak, I have to ask about your brother. Every time I speak to your brother, I have to ask about you. What's going on with Mike? I know he's been doing a few commentating gigs.
Yeah. Mike said what's up, too. He said what's up, man. He actually just got married, too, man.
Wow. Is he
still, man.
I know we're going a bit personal here, but he's with the lady who's a nurse?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. He's a doctor. She's a doctor.
Doctor, I apologize. Yeah. It's good for him, man.
That's all good.
I'm gonna send him a congrats message.
For sure. It's amazing, man. It's amazing. So, and he might, they're talking about him fighting too. You know, we just did the team combat league stuff together. And so, you know, that coming up with that momentum, I just want to end the year strong. And I think Mike may be fighting in November, quiet as kept. We're trying to make some things happen for him to fight in New York in November. So we'll see.
And touching on that team, what's it called? Team Combat League, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Touching on that, because I haven't watched much of it, to be totally honest. I'm not a massive fan of the concept of it, just because I think you've got to go in there and you have to win this one round. And I think a lot of the time, it's exciting for fans, but I just think you've got to kind of go in there and you know, take a lot of risks.
Yeah.
You've got to take a lot of risks. I see a lot of good fighters getting clipped, getting hurt with shots because they're leaving themselves open because it's desperate to win a round.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of it, but what have you made of it, obviously, participating in it, Tez?
Participating is just, for me personally, it was a chance to stay warm. You know, you're getting hit with no headgear on, with small gloves on. And, it is only one round, but it does teach you how to win a round. Like, there are times in the fights where, you know, you need to swing the momentum. You need to sway the momentum. So maybe you do need to only win one round to, you know, make sure the judges see that, okay, I'm aggressive, I'm here, this and the third, blah, blah. But you never have to do it overzealously. You can always go in there, strategize and box and do what you need to do. My brother did that. I mean, I felt like sometimes they missed their mark. The judges missed their mark on that one, but you know, other times where it was very easy. Like for me, I think my very first fight was easy as pie. Just all I had to do was use my jab. They'd be like, man, throw your right hand. The guy wasn't really there for my right hand, but I just used my jab the whole time, used my distance, used my length, and I went around barely breaking a sweat in there. You know what I mean? And so then that's the thing. My next fight, he came in there pretty overly aggressive. So I had to roll. I had to, you know, bring some shots, you know, bring some heat, you know. So I think it's great for any fighter to be in there to figure out what's happening, and how to win, how to win rounds, how to sway judges in your favor. Just one. Sometimes all you need is one round to sway judges. And, you know, that could be good. That could be it, you know. We had some young guys on our team. That was their first time really in a pro realm at all. And so, you know, it was very much new to them. But I think that's a great opportunity to get in there for one round, one, maybe two rounds. No headgear on, get touched a little bit. You know, that way you know what it's like when you actually are on the real pro level. When you got a 10 to 12 round fight, you know, for them, 4 to 6 round fight starting off.
Okay, well, it's interesting. Maybe I'll tune in next time to it. Just before we wrap things up, Tez, if you want to just get anything off your chest before we let you go, if you want to say any closing message to the listeners, take it away, my man.
Man, for sure. I just watch out. You know, just like I said, we ended 2023 strong. You know, Fox and Towers, I want you guys to keep watching out for us, man. We have had some hiccups along the, you know, some bumps along the road, but you know, we're still here. And this Saturday, October 7th, I'm gonna make sure that you guys see who Alonte Sly the Fox is. Don't forget to follow me on everything at Sly the Fox. That's SLYAZAFOX on Twitter and Instagram. Again, that's SLYAZAFOX. Thank you.
There we go. Go follow that. Listen, Tez, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, my man. Best of luck for Saturday, and we'll speak sometime after the fight.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. Frank Warren has announced a card to go down in Manchester on November the 18th, live on TNT Sport, of course. It's a really, really good card, actually. He's received a hell of a lot of praise on social media and from media outlets in boxing and stuff like that. It is a really good card. Let's start with the main event. Nick Ball gets in with Isaac Dogbe on the undercard. Liam Davies gets in with the undefeated Vincenzo Lafemina. We're going to see Echo Esserman square off against Harry Scarf. Denzel Bentley square off against Nathan Heaney. Nathaniel Collins against Zach Miller in the battle of the undefeated 13-0s for the British and Commonwealth titles. We're going to see Hannah Rankin boxing for a vacant WBC world title. And also Anthony Kakachi against Ryan Garner. It's a really, really stacked card, actually. One I'm really looking forward to seeing. And also, it's now official that there's a deal in place to see the heavyweight super fight for all the marbles, Fury Usyk. No date just yet, but we do know it's going to be going down in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. No official date. There's a lot of rumors around a December date. I don't know. I don't want to start talking about things that are just rumors. But anyway, that brings the news part of the show to a close. Let's now dive into the review part. Sorry, the preview part. That was in part one. So tomorrow, let's start tomorrow at the York Hall, Bethnal Green. It's going to be live on TNT. On the undercard, we're going to see Joshua Frankham getting in there with George Davey. Both guys undefeated, both guys 8 wins each. Good fight that one there. We're going to see Carol Itauma, 10-1. He's back in an 8-rounder at light heavyweight. Obviously, Carol Itauma, I think there's still a few question marks since he got beat in that huge upset on the Yard Beterbiev undercard against Ezekiel Moderna. There's a lot of question marks, I think, still there. He's come back with a win since then. But he gets in with a guy here called Dimitro Fidas, who's 8-3 with 2 draws. He's actually coming off 3 losses back-to-back, but they've been in pretty decent decent company. Podraig McCrory, Nick Hannig, and Adam Dines. Only one time has he been stopped in those 3 losses. Carol Itauma should win, but I'm not expecting him to walk through the guy. Also on the card as well, we're going to see Carl Fell. He's 9-0. He's looking for the 10th win of his pro career. It's an 8-rounder against a teak-tough journeyman in the shape of Angel Emilov, who's 11-52 with 3 draws. I think he's only been stopped twice, though. So again, I'd say that it's almost free money for Carl Fell to win this one on points. We're going to see Chris Bork, 12-1, getting in with Adam Mbega, who is 11-3 with a draw. We're going to see Ellis Zorro, a guy that I really enjoy watching, actually. It's for the WBO European Cruiserweight title over 10 rounds against Luca Di Ortenzi, who's 17-3. Another fantastic fight on this card as well. Masood Abdullah, 8-0. He gets in there with Mark Leach, who's 18-2 with a draw. A lot of people favouring Leach. I think Leach is in the away corner, but with the bookies, he's actually the slight favourite, but it's close there, so it should be a good fight. Moving out to this one as well, it's also on Friday at the Grand Central Hall in Liverpool, Merseyside, United Kingdom. I've noticed that Steve Lillis is the matchmaker here, which is interesting, but yeah, friend of the show, Bradley Ray, back in action, 14-1, no opponent just yet for him, hopefully gets one. This one also takes place tomorrow. 2 fights to mention. We're going to see the ring return, the long-awaited ring return of former Commonwealth champion Liam Cameron, coming off, I think it's about 5 years inactivity. He's 20-5, no opponent just yet. And the main event over there is Rhys Mould, 18-1 in a 10-rounder against Martin McDonagh, 12-2. Again, should be a good fight. Let's heat it up now for the 2 last cards to mention. They're both big fights. Let's yeah, let's start here in the UK at the Sheffield Arena in Sheffield, Yorkshire, live on DAZN. We're going to start with the undercard. Hopi Price, 11-0, gets in with the undefeated 14-0 Connor Coghill. That's over 12 rounds there. I believe that'll be Hopi's first 12-round fight. I think he's developing quite well, actually, Hopi Price. I think probably Hopi Price on points there, even though he got the stoppage last time out against James Beach Jr., which I kind of didn't see coming. Connor Coghill, you know, he's a decent fighter, but not a puncher. He's a southpaw. He's going to be giving away, I would have thought, a lot of height to the very tall and rangy Hopi Price. But yeah, hasn't really boxed anyone. You know, you look through his record, he's beaten a hell of a lot of guys with huge losing records and stuff like that. Let's move on. Terry Harper, she's 14-1 with a draw. She gets in with the First Lady of Boxing. I don't think they call her that, do they? They call her, is that what they call her? Maybe I'm getting confused. Cecilia Brackhouse, anyway. She's known as boxing royalty, former pound for pound number one in the world, trained by a friend of the show, Jonathan Banks. It's going to be her 40th pro fight. She's 37-2. I think she's a real, real live underdog. I cannot believe that she's 4-1 against Terry Harper, who didn't look good. I think in her last fight against Ivana Habazin, she did not look good. Habazin only had about 5 days' notice, and she stepped in for Brackhouse. Brackhouse fell ill on fight week, and the fight didn't end up happening. I think that was going to be on the Taylor Cameron undercard, but she's back now, fully fit, and it's for the WBA Super and WBO Super. WBO and WBA World Super Welterweight titles. The WBO is vacant. The WBA, Terry, of course, holds. But I cannot believe Brackhouse is 4-1 underdog and about 7-1 for her to win on points. I think that's well worth a punt. Terry Harper, I don't think is a fantastic fighter. She's good. She's good. I think she's much better suited up at 154. But, you know, she's getting in with a really, really good fighter here, a very capable former champion who, you know, has only lost to one woman in Jessica McCaskill. And if that rematch were to take place now, I'm not so sure I'd pick McCaskill to win. It was just a completely different style, you know, one that she hadn't seen for a while, I think, Brackhouse. Whereas here, Terry Harper, it's going to be a boxing match, and I'm pretty sure it's definitely going to go the distance. Brackhouse points is an interesting one. Also on the card, another fight I can see definitely going the distance. Kieran Conway, 19-3 with a draw. It's for the WBA Intercontinental Middleweight title, which is vacant. He gets in with Linus Udofia, 18-1. Again, like I say, Udofia is a decent puncher. Kieran Conway, extremely tough and not really much of a puncher. Are both guys really fit? You would expect this one, like I say, to go the distance over 12 rounds. I'd favour Linus quite heavily. I just think he's more skilled than Kieran Conway. The one loss, which was very, very close to Denzel Bentley for Udofia, was highly disputed. Like I say, that's his only loss, and some people felt like he won that fight. I think Denzel Bentley's a lot more accomplished than Kieran Conway, and I've said it many times before, Kieran Conway, I've got a hell of a lot of respect for the guy. He keeps getting thrown in these tough fights, and he's a good fighter. You know, he's very capable. He's been out there to the States. And yeah, he's upset the odds a few times. I just don't know if he's going to be able to do it here. I wouldn't rule him out, but I think Udofia for the points win is what I would lean to. Just think he's got too many tricks for Conway. But yeah, it's not going to be easy. It never is. And the main event, Lee Wood, 27-3, gets in with Josh Warrington, 31-2 with a draw. It's for the WBA Featherweight World title. It's a fantastic fight between these two men. Lee Wood, I mean, if this fight would have been made maybe 3 years ago, I wouldn't give him a chance. You know, I feel like he's improved so much under Ben Davison. It's incredible. Whereas Josh Warrington, he's probably regressed slightly, but I mean, you look at his last fight, obviously got in there with Luis Alberto Lopez, lost that one literally by like, what, one round or something like that, you know? And Luis Alberto Lopez is a really good fighter. He's proved that to us recently. the fight before that, you know, that very close loss, it could have gone either way for Josh Warrington last time. But the fight before that, you know, he took out Kiko Martinez, looked pretty good there. It seems like that Lara fight, that particularly the first one, of course, that seems a long way away now, you know, a long, long time ago. And he hasn't really looked bad since then. It was just one night. I thought he looked really awful that night, but, you know, that could have just been an off night. That's 2.5 years ago now. He's had 3 fights since. One was the rematch with Lara. Only saw 2 rounds of it. Technical draw, of course. We know what happened. But he hasn't really looked bad, and he didn't look bad against Luis Alberto Lopez. There's a lot of people that are really highly confident in Lee Wood. I can understand why. He's in a hell of a, you know, piece of form himself. Obviously lost to Maurizio Lara, come back and beat him last time out, and the run before that was incredible. So it's going to be a really good fight here. But again, I think it's going to be tough for Lee Wood, because again, if this fight was made 3 years ago, no one gives him a chance in hell. But here, this is the biggest stage. Josh Warrington, you know, he's got that fantastic engine, good work rate. I think this is going to be a hard fight for Lee Wood. He might take over in the second half, but the first 6 rounds, I think, are going to be very much nip and tuck. And I wouldn't be surprised if Josh Warrington gets the best of the first 6. We'll have to wait and see, but I don't think Warrington's done. And if Lee Wood were to stop him, I think that's a big statement. But a lot of people think he will stop him, by the way, that I've spoken to. And now moving to the States for the final card. It goes down at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, Nevada, of course, and it's 2 fights to mention. We spoke to him a few moments ago. Alontez Fox, 28-4 with a draw in the away corner against Beck the Bully. Bektimir Melikuziev, 12-1. It's over 10 rounds at super middleweight. I think you probably would know, you know, if you listen to that interview properly, that I feel that Alontez Fox needs to keep it long, cannot get involved in a firefight with Melikuziev. It's not going to end well if that is the case. Coming off 2 losses in a row, it's not ideal. But at times, I think Alontez Fox has shown, you know, really, really good flashes of boxing. And he needs to be on his A game here. You know, if Liam Williams is to be, or should I say, if Melikuziev is to be a bigger, stronger version of Liam Williams, then that spells danger for Alontez Fox. But if he can keep switched on, not get tired, box at range, and execute that fantastic jab that he possesses, then it could be a long and difficult night and tricky night for Melikuziev, who's going to be giving away, God almighty, about 7 inches in height, something like that. So hopefully Alontez can get in a groove and box to a decision win, but it will be a tough task. Melikuziev, you know, it's a long way away now since he got knocked out by Gabe Rosado. Come back, though, in his very last fight and avenge that loss on points. But yeah, maybe Alontez was right when he says he hasn't really been the same guy since losing to Rosado. I can see that angle. And the main event, Eddie, Gilberto Ramirez, 44-1. It's over 12 rounds. No belt on the line. He's coming off that loss to Dimitri Bivol back in November. He gets in with Joe Smith Jr., 28-4. Yeah, obviously Joe Smith, friend of the show, all the best to him, coming off that loss last time to Artur Beterbiev when he just decided to fight fire with fire and got stopped in just 2 rounds. He's had a tough time outside the ring, of course. He lost his brother. His brother was murdered, I think, earlier on this year, which was really, really, really sad to hear about, because, you know, I think a lot of us deep down are Joe Smith Jr. fans. And you don't want that for anyone. And he's a really nice guy, you know, average Joe, as I like to sometimes call him, because he's just a normal guy. Yeah. But both guys, you know, coming off a little bit of inactivity, almost a year for Ramirez, a year and 4 months for Joe Smith. They're expecting this fight, though, to go long, and there's not going to be an early knockout. They're expecting about, I think the over-under set about 10.5 rounds, which is interesting. Anyway, I want to come to you, Eddie. If there's anything that you want to speak about there, Ramirez against Joe Smith, Melikuziev against Alontez Fox, if you want. And if you do have an opinion on the main event in the UK, Lee Wood, Josh Warrington, whatever, man, take it away.
Definitely want to speak a little bit on Joe Smith, and I didn't know about that with his brother. That's just a really unfortunate situation, man. It's, you know, nothing could prepare you for anything like that. You know, you could try, but there's really nothing you can prepare you for that. But as far as this fight is concerned, I've seen Ramirez. It's not bad. You know, he's, you know, obviously with Dimitri Bivol, it's kind of hard to look good. As you know, he's just, he's an awesome fighter. It can make you kind of look bad too. But you know, like you said, there's going to be a lot of rounds that they're expecting, which is kind of crazy. I mean, when I look at the fight, I mean, you got Joe Smith. I really just don't remember, but is Ramirez supposed to be a puncher? Isn't he supposed to be a pretty decent puncher, if I'm not mistaken?
Well, I mean, I you know, it's hard with Ramirez because obviously he blows up so much from the way into the fight. He gets right. quite a few stoppages. I mean, he's got 30 stoppages in 44 wins, but I don't know if I'd say he's this massive puncher or he's just... He's just so big and you know, can be quite relentless.
Right. Well, and that plays into that factor. I mean, he can always, you know, I mean, obviously Joe Smith, you don't got to really go and find him, you know, for the most part. I mean, he's going to be looking to be busy. Joe Smith is a pretty massive puncher. So you don't want to, if you don't want to get knocked out, you know what I'm saying? You wouldn't want to lounge too close, but it seems as if that's kind of what Ramirez wants to do. He's busy, from what I understand, and you know, he like you said, he gets big. You know, he's a big guy when he blows. You know, he blows up. You know, as far as the weight, so it's like, I mean, I don't know why it's a lot of rounds. I don't know what a bookie see there, but from you know, prior experience, like I haven't really seen much of Ramirez. I've only seen him against Bivol. That's kind of, you know, not fair to make that my assessment of how he's going to, you know, match up with Joe Smith versus that, only having that image in my head. So, you know, he's, you know, obviously I gotta kind of lean toward him, obviously having the, he's had the title before, if I'm not mistaken too, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, Joe Smith, and I've seen Joe a few times, he's gotten better. You know what I mean? There's things he does now. You know, he's gotten better skill wise. I remember he tried the Philly shell, you know, defense at one point, was trying to do it, not really being as successful as you would hope. But he's a tough guy. You know what I mean? He comes to work and he wants to make an impression. You know what I mean? And you know, he's the kind of guy that has upset the odds before. He's definitely capable of doing it. So, you know, it's not too out of the realm of possibility to see him go in there and get an early knockout, in my opinion. But if Ramirez is what he's supposed to be, you know, he's former champ, you know, tough guy, like you say, blows up, so he's going to probably be pretty strong and pretty heavy coming into the fight. He should be good. He should be able to deal with it, you know, he being at that high of a level. But it's just hard to ignore how dangerous Joe Smith is when he's in there. You know what I mean? So, you know, you bet against him, and it seems like, you know, it'd be a good safe bet, and then all of a sudden he rips your heart out. So, you know what I mean. And you know, he's a good guy. You kind of want to see him win, so I'm pulling for him, hoping he does well here.
I just will say, before you move on there, I just read a headline now. It says Joe Smith a mess after his brother is tragically murdered. He was described as a mess, I think, in an interview by his stepmother. They said that they're all a mess right now. Obviously, it was closer to the murder occurring. But it was his younger brother. He was only 30 years of age. I think Joe Smith is 33, and his younger brother was shot dead outside a bar, I believe it was. And he was a father of four, including one 10-month-old he's left behind. It's just honestly sickening, man.
There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do to even think, dream of that scenario and be prepared for it. It's just not. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, it's just like a parent. Like if you think about parents. Like, you know, yeah, your parents are supposed, you know, they're gonna die before you, blah blah blah. And then when they do, no matter what, no matter how expected it is, it's just, you're just not capable of it. So imagine that, you know, 10 times over with no expectation of anything like that happening, and all of a sudden you get that call. It's just, there's nothing you can do. You know what I mean? I've received those calls from a person that was like my brother, who was my cousin. And, you know, honestly, I was frozen. Couldn't even think about anything. I didn't even cry. Didn't even, you know, lose my head or nothing. I was just like, wow, that's crazy. I didn't even know how to react. And then obviously when the funeral came is when all of the emotions came pouring. But the reality of it is, man, you don't know what to do. You know, you don't know how to react in it. What do you do? You know, it's just so unfortunate, man. It's just, you know, being able to come from back from that is huge. And even that he's even having a fight right now and not just in his room in a corner. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes, you know what I mean?
His head's in the right place. But yeah. If it's not, then I think, you know, it's bad. It's bad for him getting in with Ramirez. But yeah, move on, Eddie. Sorry, go on.
No problem. But Lee Wood, I've seen Lee Wood against for the title. It was a big fight, man. He caught him and knocked him out the ring. I can't remember.
Michael Conlon.
Yeah, and he seems to be I mean, at that time, I don't know. You were saying he seems to be, you know, he seems to be improved since then. Am I right, or has he been improved in that when he was fighting Michael Conlon? He's been with Ben Davidson already.
Yeah. He was with him already. Oh, okay. I mean, he lost to Jazza Dickens back in 2020. Like, you know, that was for a British title, if I'm not mistaken. Or a WBO European, it says here. But yeah, since then, he's gone on this mad run, you know. Beat Kanzu, knocked him out, knocked out Michael Conlon, lost to Lara, come back and beat Lara. He's in crazy form.
Yeah, so with a guy like that, you know, it seems like only thing is all his things are pointed up. and from what I've seen with him and Michael Conlon, honestly, Michael Conlon liked the class of the fight, to be honest. Like, I think he was, you know, the better boxer, more, you know, skilled, looked to be more talented. But to be able to figure it out even in the face of that, I mean, that's my opinion. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm right. But to be able to figure out a way to win in a situation like that where you got a guy that, you know, is, you know, pretty talented, pretty good boxing. And I think he came back from a knockdown, if I'm not mistaken, too.
Yeah.
In that fight. So, you know, to be able to come back from that resilient and win and then continue the, you know, going on from fight to fight. I mean, you got to look at that and say that's a hell of a thing to be dealing with. And as far as fighting Josh Warrington, right? So, and, you know, both good fighters. Interesting fight. I've seen them both. Don't really have a pick because I'm not really, not too familiar. Like, I haven't seen too much of Josh Warrington either, so it's just kind of hard for me to pick. But I've seen Lee Wood and I've seen what he's capable of, so we'll see what happens on the night.
Well, there we go. That wraps up the preview part of the show. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the 6'5", Mr. Alontez Fox. Hopefully he can do the business on Saturday night. In part two, we did the news part, then the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 416 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the tall and rangy nightmare of a problem at super middleweight, the contender, of course, Mr. Alontez Fox. All the best to him this weekend in Vegas. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.